Support this podcast via our Patreon and get more writerly goodness. Visit patreon.com/nanocast to join up.
Welcome to The Everyday Novelist. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer, author of 24 books, 34 short stories, and countless articles and scripts and essays, and I am your guide on this quest to raise your output to pulp speed levels and to explore the cracks and crevices of business and craft in the writing life. Welcome to The Questions, episode 209. Continuing our mini-series of the questions about teaching children how to write, Rob asks, I was once told by a student that they wouldn't use certain language because it was too posh. We often read and explore different authors in classes to expand their written experience. Can you think of ways to respect subculture grammar and word choice while supporting more formal writing for professional purposes? No. I hate to be that blunt about it, but this is an area in which your students will need to grow up. However, there is a way that I've seen work with students that might work with yours. In junior high and high school particularly, and unfortunately sometimes in college now because they are encouraged to do this, people begin to identify the way they speak with who they are, rather than it being merely a feature of their subculture or a feature of their upbringing. They internalize it and they make it this big point of identity and they won't compromise for anyone and it's a point of principle. Well, that's a really good way to completely screw yourself over in any number of fields, whether professional or personal, in the upcoming years. Because we as adults understand that different domains of human endeavor require different vocabularies, different slangs, and they have different rules for etiquette, both verbal and written, and all sorts of stuff like this. So what you want to do is you want to find a way around this. There's a linguistic term for this. It's called code switching. If you're in a black church in South Oakland, you speak a certain way. If you're in a boardroom in the biotech district in Richmond, a few miles north, you speak a completely different way. The same way that you dress a certain way in one context and you dress a different way in another context. When I was in high school, for the brief time I was in high school, my English teacher had this big idea that she wanted to teach all the really gifted students and all the really problem students, and there was a lot of us that were a lot of both. I was one of those a lot of both. And she got into it with us about this at one point, and she started talking about code switching, and she presented it as a secret superpower. And she explained how code switching works and how everybody does it to a greater or lesser extent. You speak differently in front of your parents than you do in front of your peers, differently in front of your teachers than you do in front of a cop, things like that. But she explained the ability to master one's code switching as a superpower. Because if you can do it on purpose instead of just sort of doing it by unconscious adaptation, you can control your presentation in different environments so that you will get the maximum benefit out of those environments. And you don't have to sacrifice your identity to do it if you are in control and in charge of what you're doing. It was a really clever way to pitch it to a bunch of kids who were starting to feel their oats and really get into identity politics and identity everything. And it really, really worked. And she was right. It is a superpower. I can't help but remember the Monty Python sketch about the working class son and the writer father, each of whom had the opposing accents in Britain, and the writer father was resenting his working-class son for getting uppity and whatnot by speaking with a different accent and all these things. And this is a microcosm of a drama that has unfolded across the last 200 years in so many households, particularly working-class households with kids that are going on to higher education or into business. There's a part of the working-class mentality that really, really gloms on to its traditions and language as a way of reinforcing its sense of righteousness. The working class is not the only class that does this. Every class does. It's just a little more front and center with lower classes than it is with the middle classes. Of course, when you get to the upper class, it's really out front. It's one of those things that sort of gets tamped down in the middle class, but not entirely. In the end, your students are going to have to learn to speak in a variety of voices and inflections in order to navigate the world. And the sooner you can break them of the notion that there is a necessary association between who they are as people and what words they speak with, the easier time they're going to have opening up that world for themselves. And emphasizing that this is a context-specific thing and that there are other parts of them, the more important parts of them, don't change from location to location. They will always be who they are. They will never be posh just because they put on posh clothes and go into a posh environment in order to take advantage of the things that the posh environment offers. They will still come home and be themselves and be able to do all the non-posh things they want to and enjoy it with resources they wouldn't have had access to if they hadn't been willing to learn to navigate in more posh environments and using different social rituals. This is all when in Rome, do as the Romans do. By learning to navigate in different strata of society, your students will actually have an advantage over more upper-class and posh students who never learn that, because your students will be able to go up or down, whatever suits their purpose. The upper-class students, they'll never be able to go down. Almost none of them will ever discover the joys of the different subcultures. They will stay trapped because they will have no economic incentive to go outside. And lacking the economic incentive, they won't be willing to make themselves uncomfortable. And so that's another way you can pitch it to your students, because by learning to navigate on multiple social levels like this, your students will have a power and mobility advantage that their more powerful, more posh peers will probably never get access to. That's the kind of language that really computes to a teenager, and it has the added virtue of being true. Anyway, I hope that helps. Oh, and in terms of basic exercises, this is a basic voice exercise that all writers can do, and maybe most writers should do from time to time. Take the same scene, you know, 3-4 paragraphs, and write it in a different voice 3 or 4 times. Write it as a point of view character who is posh. Write it as a working class point of view character. Write it as a minority point of view character. Write it as a foreigner who's fresh in the country and doesn't have a context. Use the same scene from these different points of view and maintain point of view integrity down to the language. Doing this as an exercise can also help make code switching feel less threatening. And it can show them some of the advantages of code switching that extend far beyond the English classroom. I hope that helps, and I'll see you tomorrow. The Everyday Novelist is written and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and is produced by Artistic Whispers Productions. Visit our website at everydaynovelist.com and leave a tip in the tip jar or join the Patreon to support this podcast. The Everyday Novelist is copyright 2017 J. Daniel Sawyer and Artistic Whispers Productions, Inc., and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License.